KVOE, live and local, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, presents In the Garden with K-State Extension horticulturalist Travis Carmichael.
Good morning. Welcome to In the Garden on 14 KVOE and 96.9 FM. In the Garden today brought to you by Waters Hardware for everything from home to garden. The team at Waters Hardware, you know they've got you covered. They're open 7 days a week. Speaking of Waters Hardware, we were also brought to you today by the Emporia Farmers Market. You still have time to join them at Waters Hardware the first and third Saturdays for indoor markets this month and next month. And also by Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate for all of your real estate needs, buying or selling. Doesn't matter. Judy Turner, Farm and Home Real Estate, the number to call there, 620-344-6165. Chuck Samples alongside Travis Carmichael, Lyon County Extension Horticulturist. Travis, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Chuck?
Not bad. Have you had a chance to enjoy the developing, wonderful conditions that we have here for the rest of the day today?
Oh, I've been out for a little bit, but hopefully I'll enjoy a little bit more, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's just great to see the sun out. That's
So. No doubt. And, you know, we got some possible much-needed rainfall coming in back half of the weekend, starting off early next week. But it looks like dry and mild, at least leading up to that point.
Yeah. So this is a good time to get some of those gardens started. If you are chomping at the bit, there are early season crops we can get in. I did stand out in the gale force winds on Sunday and get potatoes planted with my family.
That was one of last week's focal points. Yep.
It was. So those are in. We'll see how they do.
Didn't blow away.
I know. attempted, but.
Right.
And so, but we can get some of the other cool crops, or coal crops, I should say, into the ground and going. We're at that time. So now would be a good time to do that, since there is also talk of some much-needed moisture on its way. So in my area, there's still some good subsoil moisture, but it's that top portion that's starting to really get dry. So we do need some moisture to keep everything, that profile, nice and damp. So
good deal. Well, Travis has submitted several topics for conversation, and at least a couple of them have to deal with some of the stuff you'd rather not deal with, I guess you could say. And we wanted to start here with the beautiful, yet the way it sounds, obnoxious calorie/Bradford pears. Boy, they look nice, you know, when they bloom out and stuff like that. And they've been blooming pretty hard the last several weeks. But I guess you could say objects aren't quite as they appear.
Correct. And you don't really notice until this time of year how widespread they are.
Right.
Because, of course,
so true.
They stick out right now like a sore thumb because they're beautiful and white.
Everything else is greening up, and then they're...
Especially if they didn't get nipped by our low temps, which so far it doesn't look like the ones around here did.
Okay.
If they did, they would turn a lovely, ugly brown color. if they got nipped real hard.
And you see the kids driving around, that?
Right. Nipped real hard with those temps we had, especially at the beginning of the week. But they were once a very popular ornamental tree because of the flowering aspect. And, of course, we are, as you mentioned, we're talking Bradford pear. That was the old original variety. Now we have Aristocrat, Chanticleer, and Cleveland Select are all other varieties. And I'll talk about those separately here in a second.
Okay.
But when Bradford pear was first released, its popularity was mainly because it did not produce fruit. It just flowered. And it's self-sterile, so the flowers cannot pollinate themselves. So no fruit was produced, nothing spread. It was just there, you enjoyed it.
Stand alone.
Yes, then we learned Bradford pear was horrible on its branching. So, you know, everyone knows what Bradford pear looks like.
Right.
You know, they have all these branches, like one conjunction, they have horrible angles, which makes them weak. And that is why when we have high winds, heavy snow load, or even an ice event, they split like bananas, because they're not attached well to the tree. It is in the tree's genetics. It's just horrible at doing that. So then new varieties, Aristocrat, Chanticleer, and Cleveland Select, were developed to have better branching. But we forgot one thing. Pears, which was? Pears have to cross-pollinate to form fruit. So, enter in new varieties. Cross-pollination happens. What happens? Fruit appears.
We got fruit now. Okay.
Now, this fruit is very small. We're not creating edible fruit like we would off of an actual pear tree that we are growing as a fruit
bearing.
Correct.
Gotcha.
These are small fruit. They're hard, but they have viable seeds. So now enters the volunteer tree issue that we are starting to see more and more of.
Okay.
And so they are becoming slowly a more invasive species.
Okay.
So they're popping up in fence lines, roadways.
Other tree lines, I would assume.
Yeah, other tree lines everywhere. So for folks who travel the turnpike quite a bit, you get down towards El Dorado and you see the fields of white trees. Those are all volunteer calorie pear trees.
Okay.
So that kind of shows you what can happen over time if it's not managed. So basically what we are now recommending is no more ornamental pears. and we need to work on starting to cut them down to help reduce the invasiveness that could happen if they continue to go unchecked.
Okay.
So that's why if you read and watch some of the news, especially out of Kansas City and Topeka, we're starting to see some buyback programs, and other states are doing this even more. I didn't read the full statement, but I briefly saw off of Deep Roots KC's website, which is partnering with Johnson County, Kansas, on their buyback program, that Missouri has passed a law that there will be no more, I think, ornamental pears sold in the state of Missouri after 2027 is when it will go into full effect.
Okay, that does beg the question as to why, if we see the problem now, why we got to wait so long?
Yeah, I know.
that's a legislative question. Just throwing that out there and leaving
it
at that.
But this would be on ornamental pears. We're not going to be banning fruit bearing.
Fruit bearers, okay.
Yeah. This is on the ornamental, because essentially the difference between the two is on the ornamental, the fruit's so small, birds eat them, and that's causing half the problem on the relocation. When you think about it.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That also is what causes most of our red cedar invasion, is birds eating their cones, but everyone calls them the blueberries.
Right, and then so, moving them.
Yep. Moving them off
downstream.
You betcha.
Off-site. That's a good way to put it.
So that's why we're seeing these buyback programs. Now, from my research, they don't specifically say that only residents of those counties can participate. There is one in Shawnee County coming up on April 27th. According to the website, they're getting very limited on the amount of tickets left. So you do have to make a reservation. What they do with the buyback programs is you cut down the tree, and then you take a picture with someone in the photo so they can see the scale of the tree, and then you present that to them with your ticket, and then they will give you a different tree. Generally, it's a native tree that you will put back in its place.
Okay.
Also, they suggest, and it would be my suggestion too, is once it's cut down, you treat the stump with whether that's tordon or something, treat it so it does not regrow from the roots. And that is what the full recommendation is doing. The Kansas Forest Service has been putting stuff out about the buyback programs as well. I hope in time we will see where this becomes more of a statewide initiative, not just a couple regions within Kansas.
Yeah.
But know that those are out there. Know that is why you may hear us talk about don't do that on buying or planting more pear trees. I know when I started in the industry, we recommended them. I've recommended pear trees since I've been here. This has been the progression, though, over the last 11 years since I've started. Now we're getting to, well, we can't do that. We shouldn't be doing that anymore.
Understood. Okay.
Due to the threat of, basically it's escaping the domestication that we wanted them to have. So that is the calorie pear.
The other thing that comes to mind too is you know, with these, you hear the term invasive species, and you know, when it comes to, I think, Cerisa lespidiza, kind of the thought process comes up, they're choking out the native plant species and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Is are the calorie pears and their offshoots, for lack of a better term, are they kind of thought of as possibly moving in that direction where they're going to make things more difficult for native trees, or is it just there's other reasons why they're being called invasive?
I would say yes and no. So some of the invasiveness is coming from in some of the plots that I have seen, and I'm going to use a couple spots along the turnpike down towards El Dorado, they are getting so thick that it's going to then eventually choke out that grassland if it's not managed.
Okay.
So it's basically just going to be a forest of calorie pear. That is what we are trying to stop. And especially through here, being the Flint Hills, grassland is a lot of what we need and have. And we're now having these pop up. You know, it's just going to continue to spread trees, and then the grass will compete for water and resources. That we don't want to have that continue to happen. Sure. Or to get worse.
Okay.
Luckily, I think through here we are not as bad as what we see elsewhere.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean we're not on the verge. So just be on the lookout for that. If you have them, be thinking about taking them down. There are other, you know, we are limited on the few white blooming trees this time of year for that ornamental aspect, but there are some out there. We can get you names. One comes to mind. There is a crab apple that blooms white, and the nice thing about that one, it is also fruitless. So that would be a consideration to think of, sure. too. So we can come up with some alternatives if you're wanting more of a flowering ornamental, or we can give you the recommendations of the native plants to go in its place.
Okay.
Because, yes, it takes a while for trees to grow. We want their benefits, but we also don't need them becoming invasive
right.
in our area.
Right. Is this one of those things you mentioned, treating the stump? Do you also have to basically burn the rest of the tree once it's down, or chop it up, or kind of what's the safest and best disposal method here for the rest of the tree once it's down?
So once the rest of the tree's down, it would be, you know, I would clean up any of the, if you do it now, the fruit wouldn't be there. You know, I would be making sure to cut it down early before all the fruit forms or the fruit matures enough for seed production. That way, if anything's left behind, it's not viable.
Okay.
Chopping it would be great because you could then use the wood chips. You could burn it. Really, really, there is no directive like we would say, like with pine wilt or something, where we're telling you to destroy
right.
that plant.
Okay.
There's really no, you know, the biggest part that needs to be destroyed would be any fruit that is produced. Other than that, the tree itself, the wood itself can be used or and whatnot, whether you want to burn it or chip it and use it as wood chips, that would be up to you.
Okay. 11:19 on KVUE and KVUE.com. First segment of In the Garden with Lyon County Extension Horticulturist Travis Carmichael coming to an end. We do have more conversations coming up, and our next topic is about henbit and chickweed. So if you got questions, you can let us know. 620-342-5863. 11:19 on KVUE and KVUE.com. Our In the Garden segment here today brought to you by the Emporia Farmers Market. Be sure to join them at Waters Hardware, first and third Saturdays for indoor markets through April. Also by Waters Hardware. For everything from home to garden, they have you covered, open 7 days a week. And on top of that, by Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate for all of your real estate needs, buying or selling. Judy Turner, Farm and Home Real Estate, 620-344-6165.
The Emporia Farmers Market is gearing up for its 2024 outdoor season. Indoor markets continue on the first and third Saturdays in April at Waters Hardware, and then the fun begins downtown as local farmers start filling the parking lot at 7th and Merchant with newly harvested fruits and vegetables, honey, farm fresh eggs, and baked goods. The market also provides access to arts and crafts created by local artisans. The Emporia Farmers Market is a community experience you don't want to miss. See you at the market.
Can you feel it? Spring is in the air. Time to plan out that garden and get the lawn ready to look its best this year. Shop your local Waters Hardware today for everything your lawn and garden needs, including Cub Cadet mowers and high-powered rentals for the big jobs. And don't forget to shop the greenhouse for the early spring plants and veggies. Great gifts, home and lawn improvement, and an extensive selection of rentals, all under one roof at Waters Hardware, 2727 West Highway 50 in Emporia.
Professionalism, expertise, and experience. Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate is ready to help you with the spring and summer housing market. Whether it's buying or selling, may your walls know joy, may every room hold laughter, and every window open to great possibility. Let Judy Turner at Farm and Home Real Estate help you find that perfect home and sell your existing home. Contact Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate at 620-344-6165.
Join KVOE for In the Garden.
Watching the flowers and being able to garden.
Thursdays at 11.05 a.m. with K-State Extension horticulturalist Travis Carmichael.
Fresh vegetables from the garden.
KVOE, 1400 a.m. and 96.9 FM. Live. If it grows.
Seeing all that emerge. Start over again.
It's In the Garden and local. In the Garden with K-State Extension horticulturalist Travis Carmichael. KVOE, 1400 AM and 96.9 FM. Live and local.
1122 on KVOE as we continue In the Garden here. You can also listen to us on KVOE.com here for the next 15, 20 minutes or so. As usual, our guest is Lyon County Extension horticulturist Travis Carmichael. We've been talking about calorie slash Bradford pears, and now we start moving to henbit and chickweed. I'm not too familiar with either of those, but...
Oh, yes, you are.
Oh?
Oh, everyone knows the purple little flower that's out there right now, right?
Oh, the one that looks like it's basically a purple carpet?
Yes, that's okay. Henbit.
Okay.
I told you you were.
Maybe not as dumb as I think. I don't know. Let's talk henbit right now.
All right. So, as I said, all those purple little flowers that are carpeting, whether it's the fields or our lawns or the ditches, that is henbit. And, of course, this is when we notice it, is when it's blooming, because it's beautiful purple. And, of course, it almost matches K-State purple.
I was going to say.
It's pretty close.
Pretty darn close with that.
And so, if you're not sure what you have, henbit will have square stems, and then the leaves are really attached real close to the stem. Okay. And then, of course, if it's blooming, that's pretty well a good giveaway. Now, if you're seeing something else blooming this time of year that's much lower growing, has round stems and white flowers, that's chickweed. But we generally see more henbit through this area than chickweed. Not saying the chickweed's not there, but the henbit's more prevalent for us.
Okay.
Both of these are what we consider a winter annual. So winter annuals germinate and grow in the fall. They kind of hit a dormancy period-ish through the winter months, and then they kick into high gear real early spring and this time of year.
Got it. And then they're pretty well done by mid to late spring.
Yeah, they hate usually. The heat. So once it starts getting warm, they die out.
Got it.
So,
okay.
That's one nice thing, but but when we're controlling them this time of year, though, as everyone has heard me before, if you've listened the last several years, this time of year, controlling them is a waste of your time and money. They are so hardened off that any chemicals we apply will basically burn them back and they'll grow right back. Mm. So nothing's going to kill them at this point. You can, and we'll talk about it here just a bit, you can do a very late winter spray on them before they kick into high gear on growth as a spot treatment, but by now...
Too late.
Too late. So at this point, for all of us who are cussing it, you basically what you're going to do is just let Mother Nature run its course. As I said, once it starts to get hot, they will die out. So just keep mowing your lawns if you started and keep on doing your regimen and let Mother Nature take care of them. This fall is when you'll want
to
start
attack them. Okay.
Start doing the attack, especially on a chemical side of things.
Okay.
So the first application will be a pre-emergent in about mid-September. We can use Barricade and Dimension, which we talked about last week, for crabgrass control.
Right.
Pendimethalin works as well. Really about any of the pre-emergents work on henbit and chickweed. put those down. And then the second application of a herbicide will be in October, about late October, maybe early November, depending on how our fall is going. Okay. And that's going to be what we call a post-emergent. So this will be any broadleaf weed killer like 2,4-D, Trimec, those kind of items we can put down to control them at that point because they're going to be real small.
Okay.
You will probably miss some because they will continue to germinate on and off through that time frame. And so that's when we will talk about, I talked about doing that very early spraying as things are starting to warm up a bit.
Okay.
Most times we do tell folks you'll have to watch around that 50 degree mark is generally when you want to spray because that's when plants are really kind of going daytime temps.
Sure.
Or when they're really kind of going. So that's when more of the juices are flowing through the plants. That's when you want to spray. So you will want to watch that late November, early October, late October, early November, I should say.
Okay.
And then early on here, February, March time
early
frame
March. Okay.
To kind of get that down before they start to get too far along in flower. So that is how we control henbit and chickweed. It's something that it doesn't make sense to everybody that we control it in the fall, not when we see it most prevalent, but it's because of how hardy the plant is.
Once it starts popping
once
up,
it starts
once
growing,
it.
It's just one of those ones that our chemicals are not going to touch this time of year.
Is it one of those things, too, that these two particular plants are, say, harmful to animals, specifically those cattle or anything like that that might
be grazing on
them? I
don't believe so. I'd have to go look.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, I don't believe they are.
Okay.
But again, that is a little bit out of my wheelhouse. I'd have to go look.
No worries. On the treatment side of things, is it okay, say, on the post-emergence to go repeatedly?
Yeah.
And hit things on more than
one
occasion?
You can hit things more than once.
Okay.
Just always double check the label to make sure the label of your chemical tells you how long you must wait in between applications. You should wait that time frame because that is sometimes how long it takes for it to actually work. So, Roundup 2,4-D sometimes may take a week or so before it fully kicks in. Okay. And so you should wait that time span before you do a second application, because if it is actually working and killing it off, why spend more time killing something that's already dead?
Right.
So read that label, follow the directions on the interval in between applications, and you'll be fine.
And you mentioned here kind of attacking it now, wasting time and specifically money on it. Depending on the acreage or the size, how expensive could this wind up getting?
Well, that's a good question, and that depends on what chemicals you would choose to use. I really don't have a good ballpark for
that's
you
all right.
on
I
that.
Just, this is one of the things, again, just kind of shooting out
yes,
the question that comes
I know.
Up.
So, generally what I've taught some of the pesticide stuff with the master gardeners, I wouldn't stand out there and spray the henbit with a ready-to-use mixed bottle. I would buy concentrate and mix it myself because in the end, that will be cheaper.
Okay.
Because you get more out of that concentrate bottle than you are that ready-to-use sprayer.
Mm.
Also, if it is a smaller area, you could hand pull it. That is an option. Mechanical removing is an option. But for most folks, we're talking half their lawn, they're not going to sit out there and remove it by hand. If it's in your landscape, you may pull by hand just because of the desirable plants around there. But
if it's actually in the yard,
you're going to want to spray that.
Makes sense. 1129 here on KVUE and KVUE.com. In the Garden, continuing with Lyon County Extension horticulturist Travis Carmichael. The program, as usual, brought to you today by Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate, by Waters Hardware, and by the Emporia Farmers Market.
The Emporia Farmers Market is gearing up for its 2024 outdoor season. Indoor markets continue on the first and third Saturdays in April at Waters Hardware, and then the fun begins downtown as local farmers start filling the parking lot at 7th and Merchant with newly harvested fruits and vegetables, honey, farm fresh eggs, and baked goods. The market also provides access to arts and crafts created by local artisans. The Emporia Farmers Market is a community experience you don't want to miss. See you at the market.
Professionalism, expertise, and experience. Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate is ready to help you with the spring and summer housing market. Whether it's buying or selling, may your walls know joy, may every room hold laughter, and every window open to great possibility. Let Judy Turner at Farm and Home Real Estate help you find that perfect home and sell your existing home. Contact Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate at 620-344-6165.
They say grilling season kicks off in spring, but a true grill master grills through every season. Snow, rain, sleet, or sun. Those hardcore grillers know that Waters Hardware has the grills, accessories, seasonings, and pellets they need all year round. Great grills and smokers from Weber, Green Mountain, even the popular Blackstone are all available now. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, shop Waters Hardware, 2727 West Highway 50 in Emporia, for all your grilling needs.
Celebrate March Madness all month long. From the First Four to the championship game, coverage of the NCAA tournament can be heard on KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM.
Basketball.
Do you have a winning bracket? Live and local. In the Garden with K-State Extension horticulturalist Travis Carmichael. KVOE, 1400 AM and 96.9 FM, live and local.
KVOE News Time, 11:32, our final segment here for In the Garden. Lyon County Extension horticulturist Travis Carmichael, as usual, really generous with his time with us here this week as we talk about a number of different topics that may well be affecting your growing season. And we're going to go into Easter lilies right now because, well, Easter's, what, a week plus away?
Yeah.
Pretty early in the general speaking stages for Easter, which does kind of bring up the question about, you know, when do we start planting them?
Yeah. So some folks don't always realize if you want to keep your Easter lily going on, we can plant them outside. They are, though, also in the industry, like our poinsettias and some of those things, considered a throwaway plant. So when they're done blooming,
that's that for that.
Yeah, just done, and we'll get a new one next year. But if you would like to keep them, you can do that. So here are some kind of an outline of what to do to do it properly.
Okay.
Because there is a bit of a procedure to do it correctly so they sure will last for you. So basically, we'll go ahead and keep them inside until once they are done flowering. And then we'll go ahead and remove the flower stalk to avoid any energy putting into more seeds. We want all the energy to go back to the bulb.
Okay.
So we'll remove the flower so it can do that. And then we'll go ahead and keep them indoors until the last frost date. So for us, that's about mid to later April. So this is going to be a few weeks if you're going to keep it inside.
try to remember this, folks.
Yes. And then we'll want to keep it in the same pot until it completely dies back. So go ahead and keep it watered. Don't overwater them. They don't like to be waterlogged. But let them then fully die back to the soil surface. Once you've done that, then you can take out the plant out of the pot, put the bulb in a sunny location with good drainage. And if you need to, go ahead and incorporate some organic matter, such as peat moss, to kind of loosen up the soil, and mix that into about 6 inches deep.
Okay.
Then you'll put then that bulb will go in 6 inches deep. And then if you have multiples, 12 to 18 inches apart. So it is what you'll do.
Okay.
Again, keep them watered, not overwatered, and go ahead and mulch them. That way we hold in moisture in the soil. And then maybe this summer you'll see new growth appear, or they will go ahead and just lay there and wait till next spring.
Okay.
That is can happen. It's completely the plant's choice at this point. And then in the fall, as we start to get colder, go ahead and cover them with some mulch to help them through the winter. If you're using straw, about 4 inches. If you're using wood-based mulch, you can do 3.
Okay.
But keep them covered, and then in the spring, you'll uncover them and allow the plant to continue to grow and go from there. But so, again, you can keep them, plant them outside to try to keep them, or some folks may just choose, we'll enjoy them and wait till next year when they get back in the stores. But gotcha. I know some years we have been very kind of sparse on how many's available.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. If you like the look of them, you may choose to plant them outside so you do have an Easter lily to enjoy each year.
Cool. You mentioned overwatering, though, a couple of times. I guess how much is too much?
Well.
Or so, how can you tell maybe if with the soil is like, I went a little too hard on this.
So if it's still in its container, you know, if it is still pretty, I don't want to, spongy, you know, real wet after a day or so, yeah, you probably overwatered it.
Okay.
The other thing is a lot of times how most people will overwater is we have it in a tray or a saucer to catch the water, which is fine. But as soon as it's done draining, we should empty that out because that is a great way to overwater is to let it sit in water. We should never let our plants, house plants, anything in a pot just sit in water.
Okay.
Unless it is a true self-watering pot, and those are designed differently. But way we're
the
having
traditional these, one.
A traditional pot, we want it to drain, get the water away, so nothing sits in water once we're done watering and it's done draining. But yeah, after a couple of days, if you can still pick it up and squeeze the water out of it, there's your
it's
key.
It's a little late, but there's your cue.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about on that. Outside, that's kind of hard to judge, to be honest, especially with our clay-based soils.
Mm, true.
You know, if you're doing the watering, checking it, you know, once a week or a couple times a week to see how things are drying out, and watering accordingly is the best way. Of course, then, as we all know, Mother Nature will throw us her curveball, and, you know, we might get an inch, we might get 10, we might get none. So, you know,
anything, yep.
you just kind of deal with that as it comes. Luckily, our soils are pretty good then, eventually drying out. But yeah, we always run that risk of overwatering through those too. So, that's on Mother Nature if she
right.
assists that way. So
gotcha. Cool. Anything else that you wanted to bring up with any of the topics that we've had here? I mean, for folks that were just tuning in, we've been talking about calorie pairs. We've been talking about henbit and chickweed and wrapping up our conversation on Easter lilies. Anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, but if they have questions, they can always get a hold of me at the Lyon County Extension office at 620-341-3220 or stop by the office on West Highway 50.
Awesome. Travis, always good to talk to you. Always good to have you in studio. Appreciate your time here.
Thank you, Chuck.
Travis Carmichael, a guest as usual on In the Garden with Lyon County Extension Horticulturist Travis Carmichael here today. The program brought to you by Judy Turner with Farm and Home Real Estate, by Waters Hardware, and by the Emporia Farmers Market. 11:38 on KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, and KVOE.com. All the information you need, live and local.
Live and local. 1400 AM KVOE Emporia, 96.9 FM K245 BQ Emporia.